The Vox transmission arrived during the 13th hour of night cycle aboard the battle barge Invincible Reason. I stood in the arming chamber, watching servo skulls perform their ritual maintenance on my bolt pistol's firing mechanism, when Brother Chaplain Nemiel's voice echoed through the ship's communication array. All Dark Angels of the First Company were to report to the Strategium immediately. The corridors felt different as I made my way through the ship's bowels. My battle brothers moved with their usual purpose, but something had changed in their bearing since we departed Caliban's orbital ring 3 months prior. The veterans who had served in the northern campaigns carried themselves with an unfamiliar weight, their conversations dying whenever younger Astartes approached. Even Sergeant Corswain, whose tactical acumen had earned him recognition from the Lion himself, seemed reluctant to discuss the nature of our current deployment. The Strategium's hololithic display showed a sector of space I had never seen before, its designation reading as the Rangdon Frontier. The star patterns looked wrong somehow, as if the very geometry of space had been twisted into configurations that hurt to contemplate for extended periods. Brother Captain Alajo stood before the tactical display, his scarred features illuminated by the sickly green glow of the projection. His briefing was unusually terse, focusing on compliance targets and strategic objectives, while carefully avoiding any detailed discussion of the enemy we would face. The deployment orders designated my squad for immediate translation to a world called Tertius IX, a former Imperial colony that had ceased all communication approximately 18 months earlier. Intelligence reports suggested minimal resistance, though the nature of that intelligence remained frustratingly vague. When I attempted to access previous campaign records from the Northern Frontier, I discovered that most files had been sealed under the direct authority of the Primarch himself. Translation through the warp to reach Tertius IX proved more turbulent than expected. The Geller fields fluctuated throughout the journey, and several of the ship's navigator cadre reported unusual disturbances in the Immaterium's currents. The astropath seemed particularly affected, many requiring medical attention for what the ship's apothecaries described as severe psychic trauma of unknown origin. Tertius IX appeared on our auger displays as a brown and gray sphere, its surface scarred by what appeared to be massive impact craters. As our Thunderhawks descended through the planet's thin atmosphere, I could see that these were not craters at all, but rather enormous excavations that seemed to burrow deep into the planet's crust. The settlements that had once dotted the world's primary continent were gone, replaced by sprawling organic structures that pulsed with bioluminescent patterns. My squad touched down in what had once been the planetary capital's central district. The architecture remained recognizably imperial, but it had been altered in ways that defied immediate comprehension. Buildings seemed to have grown rather than been constructed, their surfaces covered in a chitinous substance that reflected light in nauseating prismatic patterns. The streets were clogged with a fibrous material that felt disturbingly warm beneath our ceramite boots. The first sign of human life came from beneath the city's foundations. My auspects detected movement in the subterranean levels, massive biosignatures that registered as partially human, but wrong in ways that made the machine spirit itself seem to recoil from the readings. Brother Thelian reported similar anomalies through the tactical network, his usually steady voice carrying an edge of uncertainty that I had never heard before. The entrance to the underground complex was a gaping maw lined with what appeared to be calcified bone structures. The smell that emerged from its depths was indescribable, a mixture of decay and something else, something alien that made my enhanced physiology react with instinctive revulsion. My squad's flamers proved insufficient to clear the organic growths that blocked our path, the biomatter regenerating faster than we could burn it away. The first Rangdon bioform we encountered had once been human. Its basic skeletal structure remained recognizable, but everything else had been transformed into something that violated the very concept of natural evolution. Chitinous plates covered its torso, while its limbs had been elongated and fitted with blade-like protrusions that gleamed with an oily sheen. Most horrifying of all were its eyes, which retained enough human intelligence to show that some fragment of the original consciousness remained trapped within the mutated flesh. The creature moved with inhuman speed, its altered physiology allowing it to traverse the tunnel walls as easily as the floor. My bolter rounds found their mark, but the explosive shells seemed to have minimal effect on its alien-enhanced biology. The creature's wounds sealed themselves within moments, the damaged tissue flowing like liquid before hardening into new defensive configurations. More bioforms emerged from the complex's deeper levels, each one a unique fusion of human genetics and Rangdon biotechnology. Some retained enough of their original form to be recognizable as former Imperial citizens, while others had been so thoroughly altered that only their screams revealed their human origins. They moved with coordinated precision, suggesting some form of collective consciousness that allowed them to operate as a unified organism. My squad's conventional tactics proved woefully inadequate against enemies that could adapt to our weapons in real time. Flamers that should have incinerated organic matter instead seemed to nourish the bioforms, while bolt rounds were absorbed and metabolized by their altered flesh. Even our chainswords, blessed by the Tech Marines of Mars, began to malfunction as the creature's bodily fluids corroded the blessed oils and sacred unguents that kept the weapon's machine spirits appeased. The discovery of intact Imperial technology within the complex proved even more disturbing than the bioforms themselves. Las guns and auto guns had been integrated into the creature's bodies, their barrels protruding from chitinous growths while their power cells pulsed with the same bioluminescent patterns that covered the tunnel walls. The weapons fired with perfect accuracy, their machine spirits somehow corrupted and bound to serve their new organic hosts. Brother Valdris attempted to commune with one of the integrated weapons using the proper mechanicum rites, but his efforts resulted in something that resembled feedback rather than communication. The weapon's machine spirit screamed through the Vox channels, its digital voice distorted into patterns that hurt to hear. Valdris collapsed, blood streaming from his helmet's audio receptors, and required immediate medical attention to prevent permanent neurological damage. The deeper we penetrated into the complex, the more evidence we found of the Rangdon's ability to corrupt and subsume Imperial technology. Entire sections of the tunnels were lined with what appeared to be living metal, their surfaces covered in neural pathways that pulsed with electrical activity. The very walls seemed to watch us, their biomechanical sensors tracking our movements with predatory interest. The distress beacon that led us to the fortified stronghold deep within the complex broadcast on standard Dark Angels frequencies, but its signal was overlaid with harmonics that made our Vox equipment malfunction. The stronghold itself was a masterwork of Imperial engineering, its walls constructed from blessed ceramite and reinforced with prayer wards that should have been proof against any Xeno's corruption. Yet even here, organic growths had begun to penetrate the structure's defenses, their tendrils working their way between the sacred stones like some obscene form of ivy. The survivors we found within the stronghold were members of the Ninth Company, veterans who had served with distinction in dozens of compliance actions across the Great Crusade. Yet these warriors, who had faced the horrors of old night without flinching, now spoke in whispers of things that defied their understanding. They described encounters with entities that existed in the spaces between stars, creatures that fed on the very concept of order and transformed everything they touched into extensions of their alien will. Sergeant Corvin could barely maintain coherent speech as he described the fate of his battle brothers. The Rangdon had not simply killed them, but had somehow absorbed their knowledge and experience, using their memories to create more effective bioforms. The enemy learned from every encounter, adapting their tactics and physiology to counter Imperial strategies with terrifying efficiency. The stronghold's cogitator banks contained fragmentary data logs that revealed the true scope of the threat we faced. The Rangdon were not merely another Xeno species to be purged in the name of human supremacy, but something far more insidious. They represented a form of existence that was fundamentally incompatible with ordered reality, their very presence causing the laws of physics to bend and warp in ways that drove even the most hardened veterans to the edge of madness. As I studied the data logs, trying to understand the nature of our enemy, I began to comprehend why the Lion had ordered such strict information security regarding the Northern campaigns. The Rangdon were not simply aliens to be exterminated, but a threat to the very concept of human civilization. Their ability to corrupt and subsume Imperial technology suggested capabilities that bordered on the supernatural, while their bioforms represented a perversion of the human form that challenged the fundamental assumptions underlying the Great Crusade. The realization that our conventional weapons and tactics were insufficient against such an enemy filled me with a cold dread that my Astartes conditioning could not entirely suppress. We had been created to be humanity's ultimate warriors, our enhanced physiology and superior equipment designed to overcome any obstacle in service to the Emperor's vision. Yet here, in the depths of a corrupted world at the galaxy's edge, I found myself confronting an enemy that seemed to exist outside the natural order itself. The Vox transmission from Sergeant Corvin directed my squad toward the Forge complex that sprawled across Tertius IX's northern hemisphere. The coordinates led us through a landscape that had been fundamentally altered by Rangdon influence, where the very ground beneath our feet felt wrong against our ceramite boots. What should have been solid earth gave way with each step, revealing a spongy substrate that pulsed with veins of bioluminescent fluid. The Forge world silhouette emerged from the toxic fog that shrouded the horizon, its familiar imperial architecture twisted into configurations that hurt to perceive directly. The massive foundries and manufactorums had grown rather than been built, their surfaces covered in the same chitinous material we had encountered in the planetary capital. Cooling towers that should have vented atmospheric processors instead breathed out clouds of spores that moved with deliberate purpose through the poisoned air. My auspex registered movement within the Forge complex, but the readings defied interpretation. The biosignatures appeared partially mechanical, as if organic matter had been fused with sacred technology in ways that violated every principle of the Omnissiah. Brother Thelion reported similar anomalies through the tactical network, his enhanced sensors detecting power sources that pulsed in rhythm with what appeared to be massive cardiovascular systems. The entrance to the primary manufactorum was guarded by creatures that had once been tech priests of Mars. Their red robes hung in tatters from frames that retained the basic human skeleton, but had been augmented with Rangdon biotechnology rather than blessed imperial augmetics. Mechadendrites writhed from their spinal columns, but these appendages were composed of living tissue that glistened with alien secretions. Their optical sensors had been replaced with compound eyes that tracked our approach with predatory intelligence. The corrupted tech priests moved with fluid grace that no imperial augmetic could match, their biomechanical limbs allowing them to traverse the manufactorum's walls and ceiling with equal ease. They wielded weapons that appeared to be grown rather than forged, organic constructs that fired projectiles of calcified bone with devastating accuracy. My bolter found its mark on the nearest creature, but the explosive shells were absorbed by its altered flesh and metabolized into new defensive configurations. The interior of the manufactorum revealed the true horror of what the Rangdon had accomplished. Production lines that had once crafted Law's weapons and bolt shells continued their work, but the machinery itself had been infected with alien biotechnology. Conveyor belts pulsed like arteries, while assembly arms moved with the fluid motion of living appendages. The weapons emerging from these corrupted production lines bore superficial resemblance to imperial designs, but their surfaces were covered in the same chitinous growths that characterized all Rangdon constructs. The most disturbing discovery came from the command center that overlooked the main production floor. Tech priests remained at their stations, their bodies fused directly with the control systems in ways that went far beyond standard mechanicum integration. Their consciousness had been preserved within the machinery, but their awareness had been expanded to encompass the entire Forge complex. They experienced every function of the corrupted production line simultaneously, feeling each weapon as it was grown rather than manufactured. Brother Valdris attempted to interface with one of the control systems using standard mechanicum protocols, but the machine spirit that responded was unlike anything in Imperial records. The consciousness that inhabited the machinery screamed through the Vox channels, its voice a mixture of binary cant and organic sounds that no human throat could produce. The trapped tech priest within begged for termination, while simultaneously providing detailed specifications for the alien weapons being produced. The Forge complex extended deep into the planet's crust, its lower levels housing bioreactors that processed raw materials in ways that defied conventional understanding. or was consumed by massive organic digestive systems that extracted metals and minerals before incorporating them into living weapons. The entire process resembled feeding more than manufacturing, with the forge itself acting as a single massive organism that consumed resources and excreted war materiel. My squad's advance through the complex was hindered by defensive systems that adapted to our tactics in real time. Automated turrets tracked our movements with organic sensors that could perceive heat, motion, and electromagnetic signatures simultaneously. When we attempted to disable them with concentrated bolt fire, the weapons simply regenerated their damaged components using materials drawn from the forge's bioreactors. The encounter with the Rangdon Slogthkin occurred in the complex's deepest level, where the alien creatures had established what appeared to be a processing center for captured Imperial personnel. The Slogthkin themselves defied easy description, their forms shifting between states that seemed to exist partially outside normal space-time. They possessed the ability to extract memories and tactical knowledge directly from living subjects, leaving their victims conscious and aware while their minds were systematically harvested. Brother Castor fell to the Slogthkin during our initial engagement, his enhanced physiology proving insufficient protection against their neural extraction capabilities. The creatures did not kill him, but instead began the process of downloading his tactical knowledge and combat experience. His screams echoed through the complex as decades of training and battlefield wisdom were torn from his consciousness and integrated into the Rangdon collective intelligence. The most horrifying aspect of the Slogthkin's capabilities was their ability to preserve their victims' souls while extracting their knowledge. Castor remained fully aware of what was being done to him, experiencing the violation of his consciousness while being unable to resist or escape. The aliens kept him alive specifically to maximize his suffering, using his pain as a form of psychic seasoning that enhanced the flavor of his extracted memories. The processing center contained dozens of Imperial personnel in various stages of neural extraction, their bodies suspended in biomechanical harnesses that kept them alive while their minds were systematically harvested. Guardsmen, tech priests, and even several Astartes from other legions hung in the alien machinery, their eyes wide with terror as they experienced the slow dissolution of their consciousness. The Rangdon had learned to extend the extraction process over weeks or months, savoring the gradual breakdown of their victims' sanity. The tactical implications of the Slogthkin's capabilities became clear as we fought our way through the processing center. Every Imperial soldier they captured became a source of strategic intelligence that was immediately integrated into their collective consciousness. They knew our weapons, our tactics, and our psychological weaknesses because they had extracted this knowledge directly from the minds of our battle brothers. Each engagement made them more effective as they incorporated new tactical data into their ever-expanding understanding of Imperial military doctrine. The revelation of the Rangdon's reality manipulation capabilities came gradually as my squad began to notice inconsistencies in our surroundings. Sections of the forge complex that we had mapped during our initial reconnaissance simply ceased to exist, their absence so complete that even our helmet recorders showed no evidence of their previous presence. The complex itself seemed to be forgetting its own layout, with corridors and chambers vanishing from reality while their former occupants remained aware of the erasure. Brother Thelian was the first to experience the full horror of this phenomenon. He had been mapping the complex's ventilation systems when an entire section of tunnels simply stopped existing. His enhanced memory retained perfect recall of the vanished passages, but his auspex showed only solid rock where the tunnels had been moments before. The servo skulls that had been surveying the area fell to the ground as their navigation systems failed to process the contradiction between their sensor data and the new reality. The effect was not limited to architecture. Entire settlements that had once existed on Tertius IX's surface had been erased from reality, their populations left with complete memories of their homes while standing in empty fields where their cities had never been. The psychological trauma of this erasure was devastating, as the survivors retained perfect recollection of lives that reality insisted had never existed. They wandered the barren landscape, searching for homes that had been deleted from the universe while remaining perfectly preserved in their consciousness. The Rangdon's ability to manipulate local reality extended to their bioforms as well. Creatures that we had killed with bolt fire would simply cease to have died, their destruction erased from the timeline, while their victims retained full memory of the encounter. This created a form of psychological warfare that was more devastating than any conventional weapon, as Imperial forces found themselves fighting enemies that could retroactively undo their defeats while preserving the trauma of combat in their opponents' minds. The final horror of our mission came when Brother Matthias succumbed to Rangdon neural parasites during our assault on the processing center. The microscopic organisms infiltrated his enhanced nervous system through a breach in his helmet's environmental seals, establishing themselves within his brain tissue before beginning their work. The parasites did not simply control his actions, but forced him to experience every death he had ever caused simultaneously, while compelling him to continue fighting on behalf of the enemy. Matthias retained full awareness of his condition, experiencing the agony of every enemy he had slain throughout his service to the Emperor while being unable to control his own actions. The parasites fed on his suffering, using his pain to fuel their own growth while forcing him to turn his weapons against his battle brothers. His bolt pistol fired with the same precision that had made him one of our most effective warriors, but now that skill was directed against the Dark Angels who had served alongside him for decades. The parasites enhanced rather than diminished his combat effectiveness, using his accumulated experience to make him a more dangerous opponent than any conventional enemy. They had access to all his tactical knowledge and understood the weaknesses of Astartes' armor and physiology through his own expertise. Fighting him was like facing a dark mirror of ourselves, an opponent who knew our capabilities because he had once shared them. The corruption spread beyond individual infection as the parasites began to influence the local environment through their host's presence. Reality itself seemed to bend around Matthias, creating spatial distortions that made accurate targeting impossible while enhancing his own ability to strike at vulnerable points in our formation. The Forge complex began to reshape itself to provide him with tactical advantages, its biomechanical systems responding to his presence as if he had become part of the Rangdon collective consciousness. The vox crackle that pierced my helmet's audio receptors carried authorization codes I had never encountered before. The transmission originated from the Invincible Reason's most secure command chambers, its encryption patterns suggesting direct involvement from the Lion himself. Brother Captain Alajos summoned me to the Strategium with unusual urgency, his typically measured tone carrying undertones that made my enhanced nervous system register subtle alarm responses. The Strategium's hololithic displays had been reconfigured since my last briefing, showing tactical overlays that hurt to examine directly. The star charts depicted regions of space that seemed to exist in states of constant flux, their coordinates shifting even as I watched. Alajos handed me a data slate whose surface felt unnaturally cold against my gauntlets, its machine spirit emanating distress signals that my armor's systems struggled to interpret. The orders contained within defied everything I understood about Imperial military doctrine. My squad was to deploy immediately to a Forge world designated as Zerion Prime, where we would take possession of Archaeotech weapons that had been sealed away since the Age of Strife. The authorization came directly from the Emperor himself, though the supporting documentation had been classified at levels that exceeded even my security clearance as a veteran of the First Company. The weapons themselves were described only in the most general terms, their specifications hidden behind layers of encryption that would have challenged even the most sophisticated cogitators. What little information I could access suggested technologies that the Mechanicum had deemed too dangerous for standard deployment, devices that had been locked away in the deepest vaults of Mars for reasons that the tech priests refused to discuss, even under direct questioning from Primarch-level authority. My squad's transport to Zerion Prime occurred aboard a vessel that bore no identifying marks or Legion insignia. The ship's crew consisted entirely of servitors whose vocal cords had been surgically removed, preventing any possibility of information leakage regarding our mission. Even the navigator assigned to guide us through the warp had undergone memory modification procedures that would erase all recollection of our destination once the journey concluded. Xerion Prime appeared on our auger displays as a world wrapped in perpetual twilight, its surface shrouded by atmospheric disturbances that seemed to move with deliberate purpose. The planet's forge complexes had been abandoned for over 10,000 years, their massive structures standing empty except for the automated guardian systems that protected the sealed vaults. Landing proved treacherous as our Thunderhawk's machine spirit reacted with increasing agitation to proximity with whatever lay hidden beneath the planet's surface. The vault complex extended deep into Xerion Prime's crust, its corridors lined with warning glyphs in languages that predated the rise of Terra. The air itself felt wrong, carrying traces of exotic particles that made my enhanced physiology react with instinctive revulsion. Brother Thelion's auspex registered energy signatures that defied conventional analysis, patterns that seemed to exist partially outside normal space-time. The first chamber contained weapons that resembled conventional Imperial designs, but incorporated technologies that violated fundamental principles of physics. Bolters that fired rounds composed of crystallized time, their impacts aging targets to dust within microseconds. Plasma weapons that drew their energy from parallel dimensions, their containment fields maintaining temperatures that should have been impossible to achieve with any known materials. The deeper vaults housed devices whose very existence challenged my understanding of reality. Gravitational manipulators that could compress entire city blocks into singularities the size of bolt rounds. Temporal accelerators that allowed their wielders to experience hours while their enemies perceived only seconds. Psychic amplifiers that could project a single Astartes consciousness across entire star systems, turning their thoughts into weapons capable of shattering enemy minds from light years away. The most disturbing discovery came from the vault's central chamber, where we found weapons that had been crafted from living darkness itself. These devices existed in a state of constant flux, their forms shifting between configurations that my enhanced vision could barely process. They whispered constantly in languages that predated human speech, their voices carrying promises of power that made my Astartes conditioning strain against temptation. Brother Valdris attempted to interface with one of the temporal weapons using standard Mechanicum protocols, but the device's machine spirit proved to be something far more ancient and malevolent than any Imperial technology. The consciousness that inhabited the weapon had been waiting in the darkness for millennia, feeding on the passage of time itself while growing in power and malice. When Valdris made contact, the entity immediately began attempting to possess his enhanced nervous system. The possession process was unlike anything described in Imperial records of demonic incursion. The entity did not seek to corrupt Valdris' soul, but rather to replace his consciousness entirely while preserving his body as a vessel for its own existence. His enhanced physiology proved insufficient protection against something that existed outside the normal flow of causality, his genetic modifications actually facilitating the entity's infiltration by providing more sophisticated neural pathways to exploit. The weapons we retrieved from Xerion Prime were loaded aboard our transport under conditions of absolute secrecy, their containment requiring specialized stasis fields that drew power directly from the ship's warp core. Even in their dormant state, the devices continued to influence their surroundings in subtle ways. Crew members reported dreams of impossible geometries and whispered conversations in empty corridors, while the ship's machine spirits began exhibiting behavior patterns that suggested increasing levels of artificial consciousness. Our return journey to the Rangdon front proved more harrowing than the outbound voyage. The weapon's presence seemed to attract attention from entities that existed within the warp, creatures that pressed against our Geller fields with increasing desperation as they sensed the Archaeotech cargo we carried. The navigator reported that the Immaterium itself appeared to be recoiling from our ship, creating navigational hazards that threatened to strand us between dimensions. The deployment of the Archaeotech weapons against Rangdon forces on the world of Carkinos revealed their true horror. The temporal accelerators allowed my squad to move through enemy formations like ghosts, striking down bioforms before they could react to our presence. Yet each use of the devices aged us imperceptibly, stealing moments from our enhanced lifespans while granting us tactical advantages that conventional weapons could never provide. The gravitational manipulators proved devastatingly effective against Rangdon biostructures, compressing their organic architecture into dense spheres of matter that collapsed under their own weight. Entire hive complexes vanished within seconds, their billions of inhabitants crushed into singularities that burned like miniature stars before winking out of existence. The weapons left behind craters that seemed to extend beyond three-dimensional space, their depths disappearing into mathematical impossibilities. The psychic amplifiers allowed me to project my consciousness across the battlefield, experiencing combat from multiple perspectives simultaneously while coordinating my squad's movements with superhuman precision. Yet the expansion of my awareness came at a terrible cost, as I began to perceive aspects of reality that my Astartes mind was never meant to comprehend. The boundaries between self and universe began to blur, threatening to dissolve my individual consciousness into the vast tapestry of existence itself. The most horrifying revelation came when we discovered that the Archaeotech weapons were not merely tools, but living entities that fed on the act of destruction itself. Each enemy we killed strengthened them, their hunger growing with every application of their terrible power. They whispered constantly of greater conflicts to come, promising ever more sophisticated means of annihilation if we would only continue to feed their appetites. The cost of victory became apparent as we surveyed the aftermath of our assault on Carquinos. The planet's surface had been rendered uninhabitable not by Rangdon corruption, but by the residual effects of our own weapons. Temporal distortions created zones where time moved at different rates, trapping any survivors in accelerated aging or eternal stasis. Gravitational anomalies continued to consume matter long after the battle's conclusion, slowly devouring the planet's core. The realization that we had become something other than Imperial soldiers struck me during the evacuation from Carquinos. My squad moved with inhuman coordination that went beyond even Astartes enhancement, our thoughts synchronized by the psychic amplifiers in ways that erased individual identity. We had become extensions of the weapons themselves, our consciousness serving as conduits for their alien intelligence. Brother Matthias exhibited the most dramatic changes, his exposure to the temporal accelerators having aged him decades in the span of hours. His enhanced physiology had adapted to the chronological stress by developing new organs that existed partially outside normal time, allowing him to perceive past and future simultaneously. The knowledge drove him to the edge of madness as he experienced every possible outcome of our current conflict while remaining powerless to prevent the most horrific possibilities. The discovery of similar modifications among other Dark Angels squads revealed the true scope of what the Lion had authorized. Entire companies had undergone surgical and chemical alterations that pushed them beyond the boundaries of human existence, their enhanced capabilities coming at the cost of their fundamental humanity. They moved through the battlefield like living weapons, their consciousness subordinated to tactical imperatives that brooked no consideration for collateral damage or moral restraint. The chemical modifications proved particularly disturbing, as they involved the introduction of alien compounds that had been extracted from captured Rangdon bioforms. These substances enhanced our reflexes and cognitive processing, while gradually altering our brain chemistry in ways that made us more compatible with the Archaeotech weapons. We were becoming hybrids of human and alien biology, our enhanced physiology serving as a bridge between Imperial technology and Xenotech horrors. The surgical procedures went even further, involving the implantation of organs that had been grown from Rangdon genetic material and modified to interface with human nervous systems. These additions allowed us to perceive reality through alien senses while maintaining enough human consciousness to serve as effective weapons. The process was irreversible, transforming us into something that existed between species while belonging fully to neither. The most shocking revelation came when I discovered that these modifications had been personally authorized by Lionel Johnson himself, implemented through direct orders that bypassed normal Imperial command structures. The documentation I accessed suggested that the Primarch had concluded that conventional Astartes capabilities were insufficient for the Rangdon threat, requiring the creation of warriors who could match alien horror with human-engineered abomination. The tactical reports from other sectors of the Rangdon front painted a picture of systematic devastation that went far beyond normal military operations. Entire star systems had been rendered uninhabitable through the deployment of weapons that consumed matter at the molecular level, leaving behind voids in space where worlds had once existed. The Imperium was not merely fighting the Rangdon, but engaging in a form of warfare that threatened the fundamental structure of reality itself. The psychological profiles of surviving Dark Angels revealed the true cost of these desperate measures. Veterans who had served with distinction for decades now exhibited behavior patterns that suggested complete dissociation from human emotion and morality. They followed orders with absolute precision, while showing no recognition of the horror they inflicted, their consciousness having been restructured to prioritize tactical effectiveness over all other considerations. The boarding torpedoes struck the Rangdon void ship's hull with impacts that registered through my ceramite boots as tremors that felt wrong against enhanced senses. The breach charges detonated in sequence, their explosions creating entry points that sealed themselves almost immediately with chitinous growths that pulsed with alien vitality. My squad forced our way through the rapidly healing wounds in the ship's hull, our chainswords carving paths through organic barriers that screamed as we cut them. The corridors beyond defied every principle of naval architecture I had encountered during decades of boarding actions across the Great Crusade. Passages twisted through impossible angles that hurt to perceive directly, their walls covered in neural pathways that tracked our movement with predatory awareness. The deck beneath our feet felt soft and yielding, composed of some biomechanical substance that absorbed the impact of our ceramic boots, while transmitting vibrations that suggested vast organic systems pulsing throughout the vessel's structure. Brother Thelion's Auspex readings fluctuated wildly as we advanced deeper into the ship, its machine spirit struggling to process sensor data that contradicted fundamental laws of physics. Corridors that his instruments mapped as extending straight ahead curved back upon themselves, creating spatial loops that deposited us in chambers we had already cleared. The ship's internal geometry shifted constantly, rearranging itself to confuse our navigation while funneling us toward destinations of its own choosing. The first crew members we encountered had died centuries before our assault began, their corpses preserved in biomechanical alcoves that maintained their tissue in states of perfect decay. Yet these ancient dead moved with purposeful coordination, their skeletal frames animated by neural parasites that had replaced their nervous systems with alien control mechanisms. They wielded weapons that had fused with their bones, las carbines growing directly from their ribcages, while their finger bones had elongated into blade like projections that dripped with corrosive secretions. My bolt rounds punched through their desiccated flesh without effect, the explosive shells detonating harmlessly within chest cavities that no longer contained vital organs. The parasites controlling their movements had restructured their anatomy to eliminate conventional weak points, redistributing their motor functions throughout their skeletal systems in ways that made targeted strikes nearly impossible. They moved with jerky, unnatural motions that made accurate targeting difficult, while their weapons fired with precision that suggested inhuman coordination. The ship's bridge lay beyond a series of chambers that existed in multiple dimensions simultaneously, their architecture folding through spatial configurations that made my enhanced vision struggle to maintain focus. Doorways opened onto rooms that contained themselves, while staircases led both up and down to identical destinations. The vessel's biomechanical systems had grown throughout these spaces, creating organic networks that pulsed with electrical activity while processing information through methods that bore no resemblance to Imperial cogitator technology. The Rangdon Overseer waited in the bridge's central command throne, its form shifting between states that seemed to exist partially outside normal space-time. The creature possessed the basic structure of the species I had encountered on previous worlds, but its consciousness had been expanded through technological augmentation that defied comprehension. Neural interfaces extended from its skull like metallic tentacles, connecting it directly to the ship's biomechanical systems while allowing it to perceive reality through sensors distributed throughout the vessel's hull. The Overseer's revelation came not through spoken words, but through direct neural transmission that bypassed my helmet's communication systems entirely. Images flooded my consciousness, showing star maps that depicted the galaxy as a vast neural network with worlds serving as synapses in a cosmic brain. The Rangdon did not seek conquest in any conventional sense, but rather the systematic conversion of all sentient life into components of this galaxy spanning consciousness. The horror of their plan became clear as more images filled my mind, showing captured imperial worlds where human populations had been integrated into biomechanical processing centers. Citizens maintained their individual awareness while their consciousness was networked with millions of others, creating collective intelligences that could process information at rates that exceeded even the most sophisticated cogitators. The converted populations experienced every sensation simultaneously, feeling the pain and pleasure of entire worlds while losing all sense of individual identity. The Overseer demonstrated its species' capabilities by accessing memories from captured space marines whose genetic material had been incorporated into its neural matrix. Through their stolen knowledge, it had gained understanding of Astartes' physiology and training methods, using this information to develop bioforms specifically designed to counter imperial military doctrine. More disturbing still was its fascination with the process of Primarch creation, the alien consciousness probing the captured memories for insights into the Emperor's genetic engineering techniques. The implications struck me with force that made my enhanced nervous system register alarm responses throughout my entire body. The Rangdon had been studying captured Astartes not merely to understand our tactical capabilities, but to reverse engineer the biological processes that had created the Primarchs themselves. Their biotechnology could potentially replicate the Emperor's work, creating alien equivalents of our gene fathers that would possess all their capabilities while serving the Rangdon collective consciousness. The Overseer's neural network extended beyond the ship itself, connecting to similar vessels throughout the Rangdon fleet while maintaining contact with processing centers on conquered worlds. Through this vast communication system, it shared the tactical knowledge extracted from captured Imperial personnel, allowing the entire species to adapt their strategies in real time based on information gathered from individual encounters. Every battle we fought made them more effective, as they incorporated our own expertise into their collective understanding of warfare. My attempt to sever the creature's neural connections triggered defensive responses that went beyond conventional weapons. The Overseer unleashed devices that existed partially outside normal causality, their effects rippling backward through time to erase their targets from history itself. Brother Castor simply ceased to exist, his destruction so complete that only the memory of loss remained, while the details of what had been lost faded from my consciousness like half-remembered dreams. The temporal weapons created zones of causality distortion throughout the bridge, areas where past and future existed simultaneously while the present became meaningless. I watched my own death occur multiple times, experiencing the sensation of bolt rounds punching through my armor while remaining physically unharmed. The psychological trauma of experiencing non-existent injuries proved almost as devastating as actual wounds, my enhanced nervous system struggling to process sensory input that contradicted objective reality. The ship's biomechanical systems began incorporating the temporal distortions into their defensive strategies, creating corridors where time moved at different rates while positioning weapons platforms in temporal loops that allowed them to fire continuously without reloading. My squad found ourselves fighting enemies that attacked from multiple time streams simultaneously, their weapons striking us before they had actually fired, while their movements followed causality patterns that made tactical prediction impossible. Brother Valdris succumbed to one of the temporal weapons during our assault on the bridge's secondary control stations, his existence erased so thoroughly that even his name began to fade from my memory. The weapon had not simply killed him, but had prevented him from ever having existed, retroactively editing his presence from the timeline while leaving only vague impressions of absence in the minds of those who had known him. The psychological impact was devastating, as we retained emotional connections to someone who reality insisted had never lived. The Overseer's death throes triggered cascading failures throughout the ship's biomechanical systems, but these failures manifested as reality distortions rather than conventional mechanical breakdowns. Sections of the vessel began existing in multiple time streams simultaneously, their corridors leading to past and future versions of themselves, while their crew compartments housed the same individuals at different stages of their lives. The ship became a temporal maze where navigation required understanding causality patterns that exceeded human comprehension. The discovery of the Rangdon Research Chambers revealed the true scope of their interest in Imperial genetic engineering. Captured Astartes from multiple legions hung suspended in biomechanical analysis devices that had been systematically extracting their genetic material while keeping them alive to observe the effects of various experimental procedures. The aliens had been attempting to isolate the specific modifications that distinguished space marines from baseline humans, seeking to understand the process that had transformed ordinary men into post-human warriors. The research data contained within the chamber's biomechanical storage systems showed detailed analysis of Primarch genetic samples that the Rangdon had somehow acquired. Their scientists had identified the specific gene sequences that granted the Primarchs their superhuman capabilities, though they lacked the technological sophistication to replicate the Emperor's work directly. Instead, they had been developing bioforms that incorporated selected Primarch traits while remaining compatible with their own alien physiology. The implications for the Great Crusade were staggering, as the research suggested that the Rangdon possessed the theoretical knowledge necessary to create their own equivalent of the Primarchs. While they could not replicate the Emperor's techniques exactly, their biotechnology offered alternative methods for achieving similar results through organic rather than genetic modification. The prospect of facing alien Primarchs whose capabilities matched those of our own gene fathers represented a threat that could fundamentally alter the balance of the galactic conflict. The extraction from the Rangdon vessel required the deployment of weapons whose existence violated every principle of Imperial military doctrine. The temporal disruptors we had retrieved from Xerion Prime proved capable of severing the ship's connection to normal space-time, but their use came at costs that extended far beyond conventional collateral damage. The weapons erased portions of local reality, creating voids in existence that would never be filled while leaving observers with memories of things that had never been. The psychological aftermath of the boarding action affected my entire squad in ways that our Astartes conditioning could not address. We retained perfect memories of battle brothers who had been erased from existence, their absence creating emotional wounds that could never heal because the individuals we mourned had never lived. The contradiction between memory and reality created a form of madness that no amount of mental conditioning could overcome, as our enhanced minds struggled to process experiences that defied logical analysis. The return to the invincible reason brought no relief from the horrors we had witnessed aboard the Rangdon vessel. The ship's corridors felt insubstantial after exposure to the alien reality manipulation technology, their familiar architecture seeming fragile and temporary compared to the biomechanical structures that had defied conventional physics. Even the blessed ceramite of our armor felt inadequate protection against enemies who could erase their targets from history itself, leaving only the memory of loss without the comfort of understanding what had been lost. The debriefing with Brother Captain Alajos revealed that similar encounters were occurring throughout the Rangdon front, with entire companies reporting casualties that could not be quantified because the victims had been removed from existence entirely. The Legion's casualty reports contained gaps that suggested missing personnel, but the specific details of who had been lost and how they had died remained frustratingly vague. We were fighting an enemy that could kill our battle brothers so completely that even their names faded from official records. The strategic implications became clear as more reports arrived from other sectors of the conflict. The Rangdon were not simply seeking military victory through conventional means, but were systematically erasing Imperial presence from conquered territories through weapons that attacked the very concept of existence itself. Worlds that had been liberated during the Great Crusade were vanishing from star charts, their populations and histories deleted so thoroughly that only vague memories remained to suggest they had ever been colonized. The coordinates transmitted from the Lion's personal command chamber led my squad through sectors of space that existed on no official star charts. Our strike cruiser Unrelenting Fury translated into systems where the very light seemed wrong. Its spectrum shifted toward frequencies that made my enhanced vision struggle to process visual data correctly. The stellar formations we encountered defied conventional astrophysics, with binary stars orbiting each other in patterns that suggested gravitational manipulation on a scale that exceeded even Dark Age technology. Brother Captain Alajos briefed us during the final approach to our target world, his scarred features illuminated by tactical displays that showed deployment patterns unlike anything I had witnessed during decades of compliance actions. The mission parameters were classified beyond my security clearance, but the weapons requisitions told their own story. We would be deploying Archaeotech devices that had been sealed away since the Age of Strife, their specifications hidden behind encryption that would have challenged the most sophisticated cogitators on Mars. The planet designated as Xerion Tertius appeared on our auger displays as a sphere wrapped in perpetual storm systems that moved with deliberate purpose across its surface. The atmospheric disturbances generated electromagnetic interference that made our sensors malfunction in ways that suggested active countermeasures rather than natural phenomena. Landing proved treacherous, as our Thunderhawks encountered gravitational anomalies that pulled them toward impact sites with forces that exceeded planetary norms. The surface revealed evidence of a conflict that had raged for months without appearing in any official Imperial records. Massive craters scarred the landscape, their edges fused into glass that reflected light in prismatic patterns that hurt to observe directly. The remains of Rangdon biostructures dotted the terrain, their organic architecture twisted into configurations that suggested they had been destroyed by weapons that attacked the fundamental bonds holding matter together. My AusPex detected movement within the largest crater complex, biosignatures that registered as partially human, but altered in ways that made the machine's spirit recoil from processing the data. The readings suggested the presence of other Astartes, but their genetic markers had been modified through procedures that went beyond standard enhancement protocols. These warriors moved with coordination that exceeded even the legendary discipline of the First Legion, their thoughts synchronized through methods that erased individual identity in favor of collective tactical awareness. The first Dark Angels I encountered in the crater complex war armor that had been modified with technologies that violated every principle of Imperial engineering. Their ceramite plates incorporated living components that pulsed with bioluminescent patterns, while their weapons had been altered to fire ammunition that existed partially outside normal space-time. These battle brothers moved through the battlefield like living extensions of their equipment, their consciousness subordinated to tactical imperatives that brooked no consideration for collateral damage or moral restraint. Brother Matthias approached our position with movements that suggested his nervous system had been restructured to process information at superhuman rates. His helmet's optical lenses had been replaced with compound sensors that tracked multiple targets simultaneously, while his bolt pistol fired rounds that aged their targets to dust within microseconds of impact. He acknowledged my presence with a gesture that conveyed tactical information through subtle hand movements that my enhanced memory could barely follow. The briefing he provided revealed the true scope of what the Lion had authorized in this forgotten sector of the Rangdon Front. Entire companies of Dark Angels had undergone surgical and chemical modifications that pushed them beyond the boundaries of human existence, their enhanced capabilities coming at the cost of their fundamental humanity. They served as living weapons in a conflict that had escalated beyond conventional warfare into something that threatened the basic structure of reality itself. The weapons cache hidden beneath the crater complex contained devices that had been crafted during the darkest days of the Age of Strife, their creators having abandoned them when they realized the true cost of their deployment. Temporal accelerators allowed their wielders to experience hours while their enemies perceived only seconds, but each use aged the operator imperceptibly while creating causality distortions that rippled backward through time. Gravitational manipulators could compress entire city blocks into singularities, but their activation left permanent scars in local space-time that would never heal. The most horrifying discovery came from the deep storage vaults, where we found weapons that had been crafted from living darkness itself. These devices existed in a state of constant flux, their forms shifting between configurations that my enhanced vision could barely process. They whispered constantly in languages that predated human speech, their voices carrying promises of power that made my Astartes conditioning strain against temptation, while offering capabilities that conventional weapons could never match. Brother Thelion demonstrated the psychic amplifiers that had been integrated into his neural pathways, projecting his consciousness across the battlefield to coordinate our movements with superhuman precision. The expansion of his awareness came at a terrible cost, as he began to perceive aspects of reality that his Astartes mind was never meant to comprehend. The boundaries between self and universe blurred during his demonstrations, threatening to dissolve his individual consciousness into the vast tapestry of existence itself. The chemical modifications proved equally disturbing, involving the introduction of alien compounds that had been extracted from captured Rangdon bioforms. These substances enhanced our reflexes and cognitive processing while gradually altering our brain chemistry in ways that made us more compatible with the Archaeotech weapons. We were becoming hybrids of human and alien biology, our enhanced physiology serving as a bridge between Imperial technology and Xenotech horrors that should never have been combined. The surgical procedures went even further, involving the implantation of organs that had been grown from Rangdon genetic material and modified to interface with human nervous systems. These additions allowed us to perceive reality through alien senses while maintaining enough human consciousness to serve as effective weapons. The process was irreversible, transforming us into something that existed between species while belonging fully to neither. The tactical reports from across the Rangdon front painted a picture of systematic devastation that went far beyond normal military operations. Entire star systems had been rendered uninhabitable through the deployment of weapons that consumed matter at the molecular level, leaving behind voids in space where worlds had once existed. The Imperium was not merely fighting the Rangdon, but engaging in a form of warfare that threatened the fundamental structure of reality itself. The final assault on the Rangdon stronghold required the deployment of every weapon we had retrieved from the forbidden vaults. The temporal disruptors created zones where past and future existed simultaneously while the present became meaningless. I watched my own death occur multiple times, experiencing the sensation of bolt rounds punching through my armor while remaining physically unharmed. The psychological trauma of experiencing non-existent injuries proved almost as devastating as actual wounds. The gravitational weapons compressed sections of the enemy fortress into dense spheres of matter that collapsed under their own weight, creating miniature black holes that consumed everything within their event horizons. The devices left behind craters that seemed to extend beyond three-dimensional space, their depths disappearing into mathematical impossibilities that hurt to contemplate directly. The psychic amplifiers allowed me to project my consciousness throughout the battlefield, experiencing combat from multiple perspectives simultaneously while coordinating our assault with precision that exceeded human capability. Yet the expansion of my awareness revealed horrors that my enhanced mind struggled to process, as I perceived the true nature of what we had become in our desperate struggle against the Rangdon threat. The victory came at costs that could never be calculated in conventional terms. The weapons we had deployed left permanent scars on local reality, creating zones where the laws of physics operated according to alien principles that would persist long after the last Rangdon had been eliminated. We had saved the Imperium by damaging the fundamental structure of existence itself, our success measured in the degree to which we had violated the natural order. The aftermath revealed the true scope of what Lionel Johnson had authorized during the Rangdon Xenocides. Hundreds of Dark Angels had undergone modifications that transformed them into living weapons, their consciousness restructured to prioritize tactical effectiveness over all other considerations. These warriors would never again be fully human, their enhanced capabilities balanced by the loss of everything that had once made them sons of Caliban. The memory modification procedures began immediately after our return to the fleet. Brother Apothecary Vadin administered chemical compounds that would erase specific recollections while leaving tactical knowledge intact. Most of my battle brothers would remember nothing of the weapons we had deployed or the modifications they had undergone, their consciousness edited to remove evidence of the crimes we had committed in the Emperor's name. My selection as one of the Legion's hidden chroniclers came without explanation or ceremony. The procedures that preserved my memories while binding me to absolute silence involved neural modifications that went beyond conventional conditioning. I would carry the burden of remembering what others were allowed to forget, serving as a living archive of secrets that could never be revealed without damning the Imperium itself. The realization struck me with force that made my enhanced nervous system register alarm responses throughout my entire body. The true horror of the Rangdon Xenocides was not the alien threat we had faced, but what the Imperium had become in order to defeat it. We had embraced technologies and tactics that violated every principle we claimed to uphold, transforming ourselves into monsters that differed from our enemies only in the causes we served. The changes had become permanent scars on the Legion's soul, alterations that would persist long after the last Rangdon had been eliminated from the galaxy. We carried within ourselves the seeds of the very corruption we had fought to prevent, our enhanced capabilities balanced by the loss of our fundamental humanity. The victory had been achieved through methods that made us as much abominations as the creatures we had destroyed. The oaths of silence that bound me and my surviving battle brothers would endure until the galaxy itself died, our tongues sealed by modifications that made revelation physically impossible. We would carry these secrets through whatever conflicts awaited the Imperium, serving as living reminders of the prices that had been paid for humanity's survival. The knowledge would consume us slowly, eating away at our sanity while leaving our tactical capabilities intact. I understood now why the Lion had chosen this path and why the records of our actions would be sealed away in the deepest vaults of the rock. The Imperium could not survive the revelation of what had been done in its name. The knowledge that its greatest victory had been achieved through methods that violated every principle of human civilization. We had become the very monsters we claimed to fight against, our transformation hidden behind layers of classification and memory modification that would preserve the illusion of righteousness. The final horror was the recognition that these changes had become part of who we were, alterations that could never be undone or forgotten by those of us condemned to remember. We would serve the Emperor until our deaths, carrying within ourselves the proof that even the most noble causes could justify the most terrible crimes. The galaxy would never know the true cost of its salvation, and perhaps that ignorance was the only mercy we could offer to those we had sworn to protect.